Yeah.
Well, good morning, Dean.
I was just called into the captain's office last week. It seems Baldacci sent the letter to the commissioner as promised, and he sent it down to Rubber Stamp Riley, and Rubber Stamp Riley sent it down to the captain, called me into his office to discuss what I'd lost and how I lost it, and property-wise and back wages and good time and all that. And, he's looking into it, and he's going to write a report. And so the wheel's moving somewhat anyway. I don't know exactly what they hope to achieve, but I think I made it perfectly clear that if they don't do everything I've asked for, which is well within reason. I mean, I'm not being unreasonable at all. I can sue the hell out of them for a lot more than what I'm asking. And they've incriminated themselves. As you see, you got the evidence, or a copy of it, I should say, so they don't tear my cell up and, you know, think they're going to wipe out the record, which they've been known to do.
Well, they'd have to wipe out a lot of websites and things, too, besides our radio station office. But I'm not too worried about that, because none of this is...
It's a secret location.
Shh, don't tell anyone. Yeah.
The investigators are listening. I'd just like to say hi to Investigator Shied and Karen Anderson if they're spying on my phone calls.
Well, there we go. Well, you know, maybe they can learn something.
Yes.
And,
something productive.
But let me just ask, it does sound like that system is working to some extent. You complained to the governor, and that things flowed downhill, and they actually are discussing this stuff with you.
If I didn't have the ammunition I've got, believe me, I'd be screwed.
That's conceptual ammunition, obviously.
Yeah.
Yes, it's theoretical. Right.
It's funny, the people that I'm having a problem with, the exact two people, Captain Cutler and Deputy Warden O'Farrell, if you look at one of the ad site placement paper for May 24th, they said that the time of incident was May 24th. They found this contraband, and the photographs of that contraband are the same photographs they had 6 weeks before. It's the same thing, so there's no denying it. They blatantly lied. But the prisoners aren't the only ones having a problem with these same two staff. It's the whole union having trouble with it. From what I've been told from a few sources in here, the union representatives met with the commissioner and the director of administrative services here, Karen Carroll, and supposedly they left rather angry because some things were revealed to them that they either didn't know and it ticked them off, or they were just ticked off because they did know and it wasn't supposed to be out there. But there've been a lot of problems with mandating, what they call mandating. They force you to work an extra shift. They tell you you cannot leave. You have to work another shift.
Now, you're talking about the union representing the guards?
Yes.
Isn't it unsafe? I mean, a guard that's overstressed and tired isn't necessarily the very best guard to have.
That's the point that they're trying to make, and they're still being intimidated and scared into staying and doing whatever because that's how it runs, and that's a big argument that the union has, an issue that they have that they're trying to resolve with the commissioner's office. Of course, Deputy Warden O'Farrell's pretty ticked off about that, but listen to this. Last week, in 2 days, there were 104 mandates. 36 people refused. That's disciplinary charges against them for refusing in most cases.
Now, mandate is what?
When they tell you you're not going home, you're staying for another shift. They don't ask you, they tell you. They had one guard who is one of the union reps. From what I hear, I haven't spoken to him personally, so I don't know for sure, but from what I hear, he was told he was being mandated after spending like three double shifts. He volunteered to work three times, double shifts, so somebody else didn't get forced into it. And they tried to make him do a fourth one. And he walked out the door. He says, no, I have things to do. I have to go. And he left. And they yelled at him all the way out the door. It just, that's the kind of crap that these people are up against as well. It's not just the inmates. The guards are dealing with the same kind of abuse. And the problem is, these people, when they leave, they make sure one of their own ilk takes their place. Now, O'Farrell's already retired.
Now, when you say they, when they leave, you're not talking about the guards, you're talking about the administration?
I'm talking about the good old boy system, okay? You've got a group of upper echelons here that are corrupt and filthy, and they got dirt on each other, and nobody's going to force the other to do anything they don't want to do. Mm. Commissioner, right down to some of the sergeants here. There are a lot of staff that want to see these same people gone. If they said, okay, look, O'Farrell's leaving, let's put it to a vote who gets in. Well, the honest guys would have the win. You know, they'd be able to say, no, this guy's not going to be in there. This stuff's coming to an end. This reign of corruption's got to go. O'Farrell, like Merrill and Riley and a few others around here, they all retired to take advantage of that the retirement thing they did for, like, school teachers and stuff who could retire and still work to get by. These people did it. They retired, and like Tony Groton was a captain. He retired and he came back on the bottom scale. Now, his job, when he left his job, it was open for someone else to advance to. He came back part-time on his retirement, helped with the ground crew and stuff. He came in at the bottom. These deputy wardens, they retired and rehired the same day, so nobody could fill their shoes, and they got to keep their cushy jobs and benefits. So they retired, and they get in the same benefits package without earning that level again. They get to keep it and get the retirement package at the same time. And the IRS stepped in and said, you're paying taxes on it, and they tried to fight that and lost. But anyway, O'Farrell's one of the ones that did this, and rumor has it that he's leaving in January. And it's the hope of the staff and the inmates alike that since Cutler's face is so far up his butt, he'll drag him out the door with him. This man is just, I mean, there's no limit to what they'll do. I mean, there was one guard here was a rookie. I was in the county jail, and this guard worked in Knox County Jail with me. And after I got here sometime, he came in and he started working here. And O'Farrell, who was a lieutenant colonel at the time, told him, I know you're bringing in drugs. It's just a matter of time before I get you. I'm not going to do anything about it now. I'm going to catch you cold, and when I do, boy, I'm going to put it right to you. For 6 months, this man sweat bullets with two kids and a wife to feed, you know, walking on eggshells, knowing that he did nothing wrong. And this has happened to a lot of guards. And then after 6 months, I said, Ben, what's the matter, man? You look like you're ready to kill someone. And he told me, he says, well, this is what happened. And I went and confronted him today, and he said that the end justifies the means, that he never thought that. He just wanted to see how he was going to react and all that, and it was part of his probation.
Well, that's kind of sadistic, though, isn't it?
It's sadistic. It's archaic, Machiavellian, whatever you want to call it. It's unconscionable. But it's not just my plight. These people are going through the same crap with these same people. And you got a lot of guards here that are like, you know, got to get rid of these people. I got people telling me I should press charges on them no matter what. Push them. Get them. Nail them. Get them out of here.
You mean on the on various administrators or on guards?
Yes,
or?
The captain and Captain Cutler and O'Farrell, basically. I mean, they're the biggest target. You put Merrill in here. Merrill, whoever they put in for a commissioner or a warden, the first person they're going to look to is the head of security. What's going on here? What do I need to know? You know, and they're going to get the whole pile of manure from them. And that's what they're going to base their policies on. And those people have to go. It's like the city council, you know, relying on Rockland PD to dictate what policy is going to be, you know, how the city is going to be run. They're there to advise and consent and protect and serve, not make sure that everybody's obedient to them, including the city council, you know. And that's what it's like. Yeah, these people just, you know.
Well, it takes putting some sunshine on things, like what you're doing right now, to let people know what's going on there in the system.
Lance Stapley's July 21st through 27th issue of the Portland Phoenix had the story of Mike James.
Right.
How mean does it, have you seen that yet?
Well, you know, I remember the case itself. Is this a follow-up then?
Oh. Yeah, this is a new article on Joe's letter to the governor and the developments in the Michael James case. I just received it in the mail last night. Of course, it came in it was sent out the week of the 21st of July, and I'm just getting it, you know, last night was, what, the 8th or 9th?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, last night was the 11th. So, you know how that goes. I mean, they hold on to stuff like that technical assistance report that the National Institute of Corrections did, and the reporter gave it to me, or sent it to me, and these people just took it out of my mail and said, you can't have it unless it's political, religious, or educational, because it's photocopied material. But because it's a public document, I can get a copy from the warden's office at 25 cents a page. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it's crazy. If it's a public document I'm allowed to have and it came from the press, you can't stop it. But they did, and they just, you know, they play with your mail. I mean, there are people here that, you know, are reporting that their mail is going home, that people are getting their letters opened up and taped shut. No outgoing prisoner mail can be opened, read, or inspected. It infringes upon the constitutional rights of free speech of the people receiving it as well as the people sending it. You know, I don't care if there's drugs in it or a gun.
It's not very likely that would be happening anyway, coming out of the state prison.
If it was contraband and it's leaving the prison, they got no reason to look for contraband. But they don't like it if you send something like made out of origami to your children or something, or your girl, put a smile on her face. It's like, make it as least human as they can. Kairos was back in this morning for the first time in almost 6 months.
Well, that's good news, then.
Very good news. I had to leave early, but it's inspiring that it's finally back. But for how long until they decide that they're going to put an end to it? All the religious groups here have been under one form of attack or another. The Muslims are tearing up their cells looking for prayer oil in case they brought some home so they can pray secretly at night. I mean, how do you justify that, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, oh, it smells good. We don't want your cell to smell good, or we don't want you to smell good, or whatever, you know?
I was going to tell you, I'm just looking at the Portland Phoenix and found a letter to the editor just from yesterday, and I'd like to, about Lance's article. If you'd like to hear that.
Yes, please.
Okay, it's called Keep Watch on Supermax. I just read your article in the Supermax at Maine State Prison. And this is signed, by the way, a friend of a convict at the Maine State Prison. You did a great job depicting the way things are at the Supermax. I visit a friend who has been at the prison since 1994, and he is a lifer with no release. He spent 13 months in the Supermax once, early on in his sentence. It was very difficult for him. He wouldn't let me visit him as he felt less than human. He never wants to go back there again. It's horrible what they make prisoners do in the Supermax. They can break a man's spirit in no time. The mentally ill prisoners shouldn't even be in the prison. They belong at Amhi, where they can get help for their illness. I really appreciate you doing such a thorough job and researching everything and telling it like it is. This story needs to be told to the public, and putting it on the internet is great. I wish my friend could read it, but he can't receive any information from the internet in his mail. I am anxious to tell him about this great article on prison life in the Supermax. Lance, thanks again for writing the article on the Supermax. I know the prisoners and many people who care about their loved ones in prison appreciate your concern. Signed, a friend of a convict, Maine State Prison.
Awesome.
So there, you see, it is, you know, and I don't know who that is. But it just goes to show that people, we do care out here what's going on. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense that, you know, the way things are being done. And,
it's like, you know, it seems like it's happening around the country. Like you mentioned the guy that was painting with the M&Ms.
Yeah.
I mean, the ingenuity and the fortitude to go through the pain it would take to get that dye off the M&Ms just to do something creative and then give it all away to somebody who could really use it. You know,
right.
The families of prisoners have got it pretty rough because the obstacles they put in the way of prisoners reaching out to their family, the cost of a phone call in here, you know, many, many, many times more than what it would cost somebody on the street simply because they got you over a barrel. The phone company's not charging 30 cents a minute, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All the little things that they're doing, the fines, I mean, the way they made it so they gave themselves permission to impose a fine for a disciplinary infraction. If you have, say, a book on the table next to your TV at the wrong time when a sergeant mm-hmm. comes by, that's a fire hazard. Class A write-up will take $100, please.
A book near your television?
It's a fire hazard. I have the American flag taped to my television set because I spend a lot of time watching TV when I'm locked in my cell. And when I glance at it, I see the flag, and I'm reminded of our troops, and I say a quick prayer for our boys over there. And I just like to be reminded, you know, that there is a struggle going on. People are bleeding and dying for what that flag represents. And they tell me that having that flag taped to my television. Now, this flag is an inch and three-quarters long. Excuse me, an inch and a quarter long by three-quarters top to bottom. And it's held on with a piece of scotch tape. And there's a tag that's 3 inches long by an inch wide that has my name and the serial number of the TV and all that. Mm-hmm. That's taped to the television. That's not a fire hazard, but the flag is.
You could also be a flag burner.
Yeah. It's just, there's a lot of petty stuff. But if they write you up and they charge you $100 for a write-up, they'd have to take you to court to get that money. They can't just take your money. So they get the legislature to say, hey, look, let the Department of Corrections collect fines for us. So they don't have to go to court to get the money. The Department of Corrections would automatically deduct it. And it was worded so craftily that it allowed the Department of Corrections to get the money that they imposed as fines on the prisoners without any trouble. It's just, they didn't give a damn for years about what people in the public had coming for fines. You want to get money out of a prisoner, you go to court and get it, and when we get the court order, we'll give you their money. But now that they gave themselves permission to tax a fine on us, they needed a way to be able to get that money. And, oh, geez, all of a sudden they're so interested in making sure the public gets their money. Well, who's going to get their money first? The guy you owe on the street or the guy you owe in the prison? The prison's going to take what's theirs before anybody gets what they got.
Right.
You can count on that. And the whole thing is just a hoax. The same thing with the good time. They're changing the good time law to cause a population explosion and then blame it on the public. You know, I mean, the prison population for the entire state dropped by 300 prisoners over a five-year period. That's a threat to job security. If that trend were permitted to continue, then some guards would have to find some new work.
Well, you'd think it would simply make life easier for the guards, less crowding, less problems.
Yeah. You know,
easier duty, but I guess it's not looked just on that way. Hey, look, we're going to have to take off in a minute here. It sounds like, though...
I got to get going anyway.
Alrighty. But you've gotten... it sounds like you got some action then by contacting Baldacci, and because you have the information showing that this was all highly improper, that they're going to, there's a very good chance you're going to get your property back then.
Yeah, and my job.
All right, well, you know, let us know next week whether if anything is happening with that.
Yeah. All righty,
thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We've been talking with inmate Dean Brown, our correspondent at Maine State Prison. And we'll be back with a little more information right after this.